Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
So here we go, everybody. Welcome to the final Kings of Anglia Fan Social 2022. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in all year round. Got another great show lined up. I'm joined this week by Bloomers and good old James as we discuss all things Town. Not going to muck about. Going to get them right in before I muck up this intro, as I always do. But Bloomers, how are you, my friend? Another year done and dusted. How's things?
I'm good, thanks, Ross. It's been a while since I've had to share my horrendous views on your platform. It's been very good. Life's treating me good. Life's treating Ipswich Town fans pretty good. You know, 7 or 8 or 9 out of 10, depending on your pessimism or optimism. And yeah, big game on Boxing Day. I will be there. I'll be back in sunny old Suffolk for the Christmas period. So very much looking forward to it and seeing all of you guys.
Of course. Love it, my friend. And I think maybe the last time you was on Kings of Anglia, it could have been the Charlton game where Danny Haynes gate crashed our interview.
I think you're right. I refused. I politely declined to do one after the Fleetwood game because I was that good. And I think I made the right decision.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Of course, you had to probably get a train back as well, so probably better off just in case. You know.
Oh, no, I'm not sure anyone else do theirs. That was great fun.
Okay. Very true. But no, great to have you on, my friend. And James, fresh off playing five-a-side with you last night, Wednesday. How's things with you? I know you're back in good old Suffolk. Of course, you're a London boy at the moment, but back in Suffolk for the Christmas festive period.
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm the walking wounded today. Got a few toasted on last night, a few people a little extra eager going into the Christmas break. They know there's an ambulance strike on, you know. They said don't do any heavy contact sports, but last night a few people were going into some challenges. But yeah, all good fun and a very good time at Fiveside as always. And yeah, I'm doing great, thank you. The year is nearly done, but there are still 6 more points to play for that Ipswich Town can get. So fingers crossed for a perfect Christmas for Town. And we can go into 2023 in the same way or the same kind of success that 2022 has brought so far.
Definitely, mate. And yeah, 2 more games left to go. Of course, Boxing Day. We're going to have Boxing Day game for the first time since 2019. That is just, I can't wait for that. And of course, Pompey away. We're going to sum up, though, 2022 in 3 words, my favourite sort of feature. And of course, get you guys to expand. It's been a great year as a Town fan. Of course, we did finish 11th in League One in May, but it is what it is. But under McKenna, it's been a great year. Of course, second in League One at the moment. Of course, fresh off the Wickham defeat. But Bloomers, 2022, in 3 words, what are they?
3 words, just keep going. It's been a good start to the season. Anyone would have taken your hand off pretty much for the position that we're in at the start of the season. If they'd have said you're in a 3-horse race, you're the bookie's favourite by a comfortable margin to win the league, you're very short odds to be top 2, and you're, well, minuscule odds to be top 6. So it would take an unprecedented collapse for us to miss out on at least the playoffs, according to the bookies. There's, again, this will be old grounds that I'm treading that I think 99.9% of Town fans will have heard before, but it feels different this time, this season. You can see the plans in place. You can see what we're going for and it being pretty much successful in every single metric. I know we're not top of the league. We have had probably, if you look at it, chances to be 5, 6, 7, 8 points clear and we haven't taken them. But you should take a lot of heart from the fact that the 2 teams that we're in direct competition for the league and the top 2 are certainly not better than us. I'm not going to say we're much better than them, but it's a very even playing field. And with the manager that we have in place and the caliber of players at our disposal are actually playing more or less to their capabilities, we are in a very strong position. Plymouth are worried about losing players and the fact that they've done an Ipswich every year and tailed off towards the end of the season. Sheffield Wednesday fans don't like their manager. Certainly the vocal minority on Twitter don't seem to like their manager anyways.
Oh, just ignore them. Yeah. Ignore any vocal minority on Twitter.
Who'd be a vocal supporter of football team on Twitter?
Don't you dare.
But there's no real angst at our club, which can only be good. Stability is good. And it feels different this time. I think actually, we were talking just before this pod started about the darts, and Town fan Ryan Meikle was playing the other day. And I read his East Anglian interview, which must have taken place just before the world started. And he was asked about it. And he said, it feels different this time. And I think that's the best phrase to say, really. So just keep going. If we do what we've done in the first 22 games of the season, is it 22? You read 22? Yeah. It is. If we do that for the next 24, we almost certainly, touch wood, will be in the top two. So just keep going.
And I think my first word leads on from Bloomers' whole rhetoric over the last couple of minutes, because having known Tom for a couple of years now and getting to know him pretty well, I know that he can be highly critical of Ipswich Town manner.
I've made James tear his hair out.
I had a full head of hair before I met Tom. But my first word is optimistic, because just hearing you speak there is just like, it's magic to my ears. Like, having Ipswich Town fans happy, having us talk about positivity because we're doing well for a change, rather than, oh, this person's made a mistake for this goal, or oh, like we lost on Saturday and yet we're still sitting here being like, we're not starting the pod like bemoaning a loss at the weekend. We're sitting here saying like, we've had such a good half of the season. So yeah, first word is optimistic, and it's simply because we have all witnessed watching us this season quite a lot, like between going into live games and going and watching online when we can on iFollow as well. And we're seeing firsthand like how well we're playing. And similar to Tom's point, we've actually let quite a lot of points go this season. There's draws which should have easily been wins. So we could have that extra. We could be six more points. We could be few points clear. But again, we're not talking about that. We're just saying, because we're putting in fairly consistent performances, it's been really good. So that was first word, optimistic. Second word is silky, and this is completely to do with our style of play at the moment. It's actually probably since Joe Royal days, and I was quite young. I was only 9, 10 years old then. It's probably the best football that we've played style-wise. Sometimes our build-up is a little ponderous. Sometimes you kind of want to create more chances, but they're only very minor points. And I genuinely think that some of our football is quite scintillating at times. We have a lot of the ball, and we also seem to create enough chances to keep at least me happy. And we definitely score enough goals to keep me happy in general. So silky football has been this season.
I'm going to jump in and quickly ask, because it's, you know, well, we know each other quite well, so this will be quite a loose pod. Do you think that we should have more of a plan B sometimes? We don't even have a plan A2. Like, plan A is plan B, C, D, E, F. First time I've done the alphabet in a while. I had to think about it then.
I was actually thinking about this earlier today, and I was thinking that, especially when I was watching us on Saturday, I was thinking we were quite similar in our build-up every single time, quite ponderous, very happy to pass it around the back, try and move around the defence. And when you come across a team like Wickham were, when they've gone 1-0 up, or when you play Lincoln, like when we also lost 1-0, you're right, Tom. We're like, we don't really have that plan B option. We don't really have the long ball option. We have seen it occasionally this season, maybe a bit more at Derby at home. I think we did a little bit more of the direct football. But most of the time, it might not have been that game, but there's definitely a couple of games this season we've been a little bit more direct in our approach. But it seems to be that what happens is they do, like the coaching staff, they do the analysis before the game, they decide on the game plan, and then that game plan gets executed throughout the whole game. I'm not I'm not 100% sure yet about how much in-game changes there are. It's like, yep, we're going to do something completely different to what we researched. And you could say that, you know, if you're putting so much preparation into it, potentially you just should stick to it, because if you're playing on statistics, 90% of the time it's going to work. So therefore that you'll just play the statistics and be like, yeah, we're good with it. But there is an argument.
Yeah, this is it. I think we're very money ball. So like we look at the, I think, to borrow a phrase from Not the Top 20, it's probably the most famous EFL podcast there is around, and I listen to it all the time. I think they're slaves to the data. Whether that's a good or a bad thing can be discussed on different merits. But I do feel sometimes that, again, maybe it's just because they're such a young coaching staff that find their own feet, that sometimes, you know, some more experienced managers can see what's happening and make a change on the fly. You only have to look at the World Cup final on Sunday to see examples of that coming to fruition, because France and Didier Deschamps, if they'd have carried on their game plan in the second half, they'd have lost about 5-0. But the fact that he saw what was happening, made changes, and okay, they were maybe a little bit fortunate to get back into it 2-2, but without it, they'd have been dead in the water long before they had a chance to get back in the game. So
absolutely,
we're talking very minor critiques here, but it is something I've noted. And like, I think it was the Cambridge game, and I've mentioned it a few times, but we spent 99% of the game doing one thing, and 99 times we tried it, 100th time it worked, but great. But like, it's one of those ones where it could easily have been 90 minutes, 0-0, and you're sitting there and we're having this exact conversation. So, sorry, I derailed I want to hear a third now.
Actually, I was just going to do a quick anecdote on data, because I was in a talk the other day, and it was about how NBA basketball has completely changed in the last 10 to 15 years. And there's this brilliant diagram, so look it up on Google afterwards, but it's about the kind of the average amount of points that you score from different zones within the basketball court. And what would happen is so everything inside the D is 2 points, and then everything outside the D is 3 points. And what was happening in the early noughties is people be shooting with from everywhere inside the D, from right under the basket to all the way up to the edge of the D. And that would be 2 points. That would score you 2 points every time. So right under the basket, your expected points almost would be like 1.8. So it'd be pretty high. So it'd be really highly concentrated color. And then as you got out further towards the edge of the D, it would slowly decrease and decrease, where you're only getting about 0.7, 0.8 just inside the D. And then as soon as you jumped outside the D again, you get 3 points for that. So your expected points jumps up to something like 2.0 again. So what happened in the kind of about 10 years ago is people went for this moneyball data-driven approach, and they just basically told players, just stop shooting inside the D, but like in the midcourt. Stop shooting in the midcourt. It's not worth it. We don't want to do it. Work the ball either into the net, like right under the net, or go and shoot outside the D. And then literally, so now in NBA, you get hardly any midcourt shooting within the D. It's all like behind the 3-point line or right under the basket. And it just kind of sums up Ipswich's approach. It's like, we're going outside the D every time to try that approach, or we're going under the basket every time.
Yeah, hilariously, we don't take any long shots. All we do is like, we are literally doing the inverse of that. All we do is try and get it out wide, put a ball across, and have someone try and knock it in.
We're trying to go under the basket every time.
This isn't an NBA podcast. Sorry, Ross, go on.
That's fine. Yeah, I take that point as well. We never shoot from outside the box. And the amount of times we could have done it against Wickham, like Sam Morsey loves to take a shot, yeah.
If you think about the kind of last minute goals that we've conceded, I was just literally thinking about the one the other week, the one that looped over Walton. It seems more often than not that people just take pot shots and we're like, oh, that's so unfortunate that we conceded in the last minute with a deflected long range shot. But we don't do it in response. Like, we always try and keep the build up into the injury time if we need a goal. So, yeah, I think that could work.
Both of Plymouth's goals against us, they're both really long range good goals. So maybe, if you listen,
I must admit that our goal for that game is extremely fortunate. So
yeah, that as well. Yeah.
Robert
the Green and all that.
Maybe our data driven approach works percentage wise and will get us promoted, but sometimes in a data-driven environment and data-driven world, it doesn't leave a lot of excitement or natural creativity or flair. So maybe that's just maybe that's the way it's going to be. We're very cutthroat and we're data driven and we know it's going to work, so we're going to do it that way. But yeah, it means it's very methodical, very thought through, and yeah, it's going to work most of the time. But when it doesn't work, it will probably frustrate us because it's just like, oh, somebody just do something, someone just like do something different and try it and score. But I don't think that's the approach that this coaching staff are going for, and I'm fine with that as long as we win, you know, as long as we win that percentage of results, as long as we average the 2.1 points a game, which is going to get us promoted, you know, effective football. And we haven't seen much of Ipswich Town getting promoted like in the last 20 plus years, so, or none. So it'd be a quite nice change. I will quickly touch on my third word because I realize we got highly sidetracked there. And my third word is unified. And I say unified between the staff and the players. I say unified between the players themselves. There's a lot of big, no, not a lot. There are some big characters in that dressing room, but I don't think there's a lot of huge egos like we might have had in the past. And what I mean by that is I don't feel like too many players are going to get too big for their boots. They're all pulling in the same direction. They all know what the goal is this season. And they seem like a good, humble bunch. Obviously, professional footballers, so they get paid a lot. So humble, I don't know. But, you know, I actually think they're quite genuine as a group. And I think that makes it easy to work hard for each other. And it means as fans as well, it's easy to kind of get behind them as well. So also unified between fans and staff and like the coaching team and fans and the players. The kind of community feel has been really good this season. I feel like there's been a lot of positive noise from owners and fans, from owners with management staff. And I feel like the whole club has got the same goal, and there's no like us and them mentality that we might have had under certain other managers. And there's no, there's no real animosity between anybody. I think everybody has the same goal for this club, and that is to get promoted.
Yeah, I think everyone realizes that we've got the right captain aboard the ship. I don't know why I did a nautical pun, but like it's like, yeah, it just feels.
It's because it's HMS Piss the League, isn't it? So that's why you did a nautical pun.
I mean, to be honest, if that was the case, then there'd be more sinkings in Ipswich than the bloody Titanic. So.
Yeah, it's already set sail three times and sunk.
Ross, what are your three words?
I was talking about this earlier. Oh yeah, put me on the spot. To be fair, I was actually ready for that. I was ready for James or yourself to go, oh, what's your three words, really? Because I ask the questions, but then I never actually get the answers either. So we're going up. That's four words, isn't it? That's four words.
Well,
That's fine. So yeah,
Are you going to be bringing the we're going up flag to whatever game we get promoted at? You know,
aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, there's the famous picture at Wembley 2000 with we're going up. We need a similar flag this season.
Let's do it.
I imagine that'd be the job of James Pullen, won't it?
Probably.
To get the kit man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I'm sure the league themselves, I think they normally give them some flags. And stuff.
Anyway, way ahead of ourselves.
So you can get the Sky Bet branding on there. That's why the league provide them.
That's definitely. But yeah, I'm just going with my heart this year. As I said, previous years, I've gone with my head. Yeah, they're going to bottle it.
So, Ross, are we officially saying that the season is not over at this point in time?
Yeah, this time last year, I was pretty much, yes, it's dead. There's no point even planning the final 22 games of the season.
I remember sitting there in October saying we might be in a relegation battle in six games. So that's where you've got to sit back and take stock and realise how different it is. Definitely. And it is very, very different. Lovely stuff.
Definitely. Or when we started this fan social, you know, podcast, you know, it was a lot of negativity. Of course, this is more counseling session, but now it's more like we're loving it. We're just loving it. Loving the football. Loving the silky football, as James says.
Yeah, I think I said a few months ago as well, like if you can't enjoy being an Ipswich supporter now, then I don't think you will ever enjoy supporting a football club, because we've had a lot of pain over the last, since we've all supported Ipswich Town, and this is some of the best stuff that we've ever seen and some of the best results we're getting. So this is a time to enjoy it. If we end up don't get promoted, then it's going to suck so bad, but you got to enjoy the journey as well.
Definitely. I'll be going back to my head then going, oh, God's sake, I should have just said, nah, they're not going to do it. But nah, all good, all positivity. Well, let's move on then to, of course, the January transfer window is fast approaching. Of course, players get linked already. A former Town loanee out of nowhere. It's now been 10 years since he last played for us. Massimo Luongo, which is great to say, by the way, boys. I love Sam. Massimo Luongo. Great name.
Massimo Luongo.
It's nice, isn't it?
No. I haven't nailed it yet. I'll get to it later.
Why not? If I can somewhat nail it, anyone else can. But yeah, Massimo Luongo is training with the Blues. Both quick thoughts on that when you saw the news, and he's going to be a free agent. Looks like in January he's got a short term deal with Middlesbrough. Of course, was at Sheffield Wednesday with QPR as well. Was on loan back in 2012. Can you remember much of that loan spell? Once again, that was 10 years ago. Yeah, take away, boys.
Yeah, that was going to be part of my answer. Like, I was just thinking about, personally, that was my first year of university, and it feels like an absolute lifetime ago. And it was also 1, 2, 3, 4 managers ago. So, which actually, that if you're a Derby fan, that's only about 2 years. But, it's a long time ago for Ipswich fans, so... Yeah, it does feel really alien. And I've got to be honest, no, I don't really remember a lot about him at all. It's not my job to be a historian on the club, so I can't lie to you and say I remember loads. From what he did at Sheffield Wednesday last season, it seems like a good thing on paper, a bit of midfield depth. If he doesn't play every game, okay, fine. There is, when everyone's fit, sufficient enough depth there anyways. If it's another body to bring in to, stave off the likes of Morsey and Evans getting out and then being up Poop Creek without a paddle, then yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. I don't know what he'd want, what wages he'd want, or if it's just been like a short-term thing to the end of the season. But I've got to be honest, there's worse shouts out there and less realistic shouts out there, especially now that he's playing for training with us. So yeah, I'm all for it. It is a bit annoying when you sign a player who is injured or has had injury issues, and then the worst happens. And I don't know if we're getting on to that later, but obviously the news about Kamara isn't the best.
Yeah.
So, these things do happen, but I guess if we've got the financial clout to take a punt and one of these signings do come off, then happy days. And it's not like a make or break signing. So, yeah, for me...
Is there any positions on the pitch, Bloomers, that you would say if we were linked with somebody, you'd be like, nah, not required?
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, just goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, I was being a bit facetious with that answer, but with outfield players, there's always a need for depth. You can't really ever have enough, especially in the rough and tumble of League One, where you've got 46 challenging League One games. I know we're not in the League Cup anymore. We're not in the JP, or whatever it's called now, Papa John's Trophy. Yes, we're in the FA Cup, but we're not going to get to the, latter stages of it realistically. So is it still reliable to...
What's that, I'd say number 10 / right wing. I don't think we need anybody else there. That if I saw we were linked with another number 10, I'd be questioning it. I'd be like, hang on a minute, what's going on here?
Hang on a minute. Right, we're saying centre backs maybe, wing backs maybe, anchor midfielders maybe, don't touch the wide players or the number 10s, and then maybe another striker.
Yeah, I'd say potential. I'd say anything behind the striker, but attacking, I think we're probably set for there. I think I think it might upset the apple cart a little bit too much if we brought someone else in. And if somebody else was linked, I would think that might suggest bigger injury concerns for somebody.
Yeah,
either Luko or Harness.
I honestly don't think there's many egos in the squad at all, actually, compared to other seasons. I think in terms of upset the apple cart, I don't think in terms of upsetting other players that would happen. In terms of upsetting a winning side, yeah, I get your point. Does happen sometimes, whether the manager sees it or not. But yeah, what's your memories then of Massimo, James, if any?
I don't really have any memories, to be honest. It's quite like quite a lot of players in that period. They seem to just come and go very too quickly. We seem to be really over-reliant on loans a lot of the time, and he was one of them. And it kind of all just merges and fades into one. So not a lot of memories. But
that's going what happens back, with
age. Oh, don't. But I would say that, yeah, that is a position where we're playing at the moment, we're playing Cam Humphreys every week. So I can kind of understand why I've wanted to strengthen there. Cam's done really well, and I've been actually really impressed with the way he's been playing. But I certainly would agree that if Don Ball's out and Vinicius Camara's out, like for maybe all of the season, you're thinking, yeah, you probably want a fourth player in there with Evans, Morsey and Humphreys to kind of battle out. Because I think that's what we were set up to do, really, with Camara and Ball and Morsey and Evans. And as it's turned out that two of them have got injured. Two of them got injured. So bringing in another one seems sensible to me.
Yeah, and you guys sort of covered your shopping list for January there in terms of positions.
Yeah, I think I would probably go with be very mindful and careful. And I think we have been in the recruitment for this season about the kind of characters we bring in and about the kind of players we bring in. I don't think this squad needs a lot to get promoted. I think it would... I don't think we need a striker. I just don't. I don't think we need any more attacking players. I think central midfield is probably probably the place I would strengthen. Maybe a right back might be about it.
Well, not on that note, but on the notes of bringing in players, Ross, I believe we are linked with a Peterborough United player.
Yeah, once again, of course, was linked in the summer. Kieran McKenna was interested in him, and now once again, he's linked. A transfer inquiry has been made, apparently, that is understood. He played against us a few weeks back, of course, in the town win against Peterborough. 4 goals, 25 games this season. Jack Taylor, sorry.
What is his actual position on the pitch?
He's a versatile midfielder. I think he can play attacking mid, if you know, a number 10, which is sort of what you said you don't need, but he can also play deep midfield and centre midfield and stuff like that. So versatile, and that's what McKenna likes, doesn't he? Likes versatile players. I don't know if you saw the story that we put out, I think, after the link last summer. Basically, Barry Fry sort of tongue-in-cheek said £10 million. That is his price tag.
Yes, I remember that.
Oh, he's still at Peterborough?
Yeah, still about, yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah, he's still there.
I personally reckon that's a bit of a smoke and mirror games, potentially. Yeah. Maybe an inquiry.
I've seen Barry Fry do transfer business. That is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. No, but
if you don't know what I'm on about, the YouTube clip, type in Barry Fry transfer or something like that. There's a they cameras let him into the boardroom once. I think he was at Birmingham and he was conducting business with an agent with a player right there. It is fantastic. It's very Harry Redknapp-esque. So have cool. It's very it's be a bit more cultural. It's more Tom Skinner-esque. So have a look at that if you haven't already. Sorry, James, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like that could be a bit of a carrot that's been dangled, but actually, it might be to Ashton or whatever the Ipswich recruitment team is actually diverting attention elsewhere, because we don't commonly hear about links until we sign a player. So I'd be surprised if we hear we're linked with player after player in this January transfer window and ending up going to sign them. I can't see us going and releasing something publicly or letting something get released publicly. And then we chase them all window and then we sign them for an overly inflated price. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened in the summer, weren't it? That's what happened in the summer.
Yeah, with George Hurst for ages. And in the end, we didn't sign him. So,
yeah.
On Taylor himself, I can't profess to give you a fountain of knowledge about him. But again, he was, by the sounds of it, possibly sought after in the summer. And circumstances might have changed so that it's a more viable prospect now. But
I think he ticks the boxes for the dashboard and for the type of player. Like he's 24, I think I read. So really, really, really good age for like the, if you're thinking from a business sense, like if you think you can improve a player and then sell him on in 2-3 seasons time, like there's a potential that's a £6-7 million player there in a few seasons time, whereas, and now he might cost £1.5 million or something. So
yeah,
you know, there's real potential there, but whether we actually need somebody there, not sure.
I think the last thing I'll say is that hopefully if we do sign him, he ends up better than the last Taylor that we signed from Peterborough.
Yes. Oh dear. Paul Taylor.
Let's not go there, please.
I wonder what he's doing these days.
He's definitely... I think he was playing non-league, but yeah, that's all we need to know. But yeah. Because we were going to sign George Boyd as well, weren't we? I think we were going to sign them both, and eventually we just got Paul Taylor. And
yeah, that's correct. And George Boyd, famously, the one who, I think it was at Hull, had a medical and they thought he was blind or something like that, so didn't sign him. Then went to Nottingham Forest. I'm not making this up. Then went to Nottingham Forest and ended up being amazing. I will find out the exact story of that while I use the next topic, Ross. Give me 2 seconds.
That's fine. But yeah, I don't know where to go with this now.
Let's move on.
Well, Bloomers, look. Well, the next feature is actually the strike. So some more ridiculous stuff now on the podcast. Of course, as always, pens and paper at the ready. Play at home. And of course, there's also going to be next week, we're going to be doing a quiz, a live quiz of 2022. So look forward to that, ladies and gentlemen. Bloomers, have you been able to find it yet?
Yes, I have. So I got. I was right in what I said, but I got the teams wrong. So in January 2013, he got a move potentially agreed with Nottingham Forest. Forest pulled out of the deal and said it was due to an inconclusive eye test. And Darren McAntony, obviously that famous shrinking violet, said he's played 300 matches and scored from the halfway line the other month. But Forest say he has an eyesight problem. The whole thing stinks. So he ended up staying for another month and then joined Hull City on loan in February 2013 with a view to a permanent move, which happened. I had to double check that. Joined on a two-year contract in 2013.
Sounds like with Forest, it was fee agreed, terms agreed, and they had to make some BS excuse.
Yeah, the classic Football Manager one where you sign two people at the same time and you end up actually being able to sign both of them. But there's one you actually wanted, so you cancel the other one to get the other one through. We've all done
absolutely.
That.
Wow, yeah, that is crazy. Oh, I'm sure there's so many other incredible, like, you know, medical stories. I'm sure in my town. I'm sure, yeah, I love it. Okay, then, boys, let's get into the strike. Then, 4 questions plus strike. The final strike of 2022. As I said, we are going to be doing a quiz next week, but that won't be the same format as a strike. But this is the final one. Is James or Bloom is going to be champion to end the year? First question. He's on Leif Davis, of course, been so far the player of the season. He's also his birthday on the 31st of December. Happy birthday to him for then. Now, he was at which League One side's academy? Was it Morecambe, Bolton or Port Vale? So before joining Leeds, he was at this League One academy. He also, of course, was born in Newcastle, but wasn't at Newcastle academy and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a nice little fun fact here. But yeah, what a player he's been so far from his debut to what he's doing now. Right then, boys, what do you reckon then? Morecambe?
I'm not sure. I've done the strike probably about, you know, 6 or 7 times now. I think there's been about like 3 questions I've actually known in the whole history of me doing the strike. I'm absolutely atrocious this game, but let's have some guesses.
Go ahead.
Okay, I've gone for Bolton.
I thought that was setting up for him to tell us that he knew this one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Not at all.
Funny enough, I've gone for Bolton as well. My reasoning was, obviously, he was at Leeds, and it's the nearest place to Leeds on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're both wrong, though. You're both wrong.
Oh.
It's actually Morecambe, of all teams.
That was the one I wasn't going to say. So
yeah, Morecambe of all teams.
Fair enough.
So there we go. So no points for either of you. Question 2. And it is about middle names once again. Terry Butcher has his birthday this month. What is his middle name? Ian, John or Ken?
Solid names there. Two of those names are in my family. So
there we go.
They are solid old names. Apologies to my granddad and my uncle.
Apologies to all Ian's, John's and Ken's listening in.
Well, I am right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't it was it in this World Cup? Was it the first time there was like no player called Gary or something?
I don't know, but that's an incredible stat. Gary Medel holding that for ages.
I think it is the stat, yeah.
I think I was watching the final coverage as well, and Gary Lineker said that every number between 1 and 23 scored a goal. Like, that one was an own goal, but every other number had scored a goal in the World Cup. I thought that was fantastic.
That is correct. Great stats.
Love that. Okay, right, boys. Goblin. Ian, John, or Ken?
I've gone for Ian.
Oh, my God. We spend too much time together. I have gone for Ian.
And, well, both correct. It is Ian.
Yes.
Ian. There we go. Terry John Butcher could still work. Terry Ken Butcher could work.
Not Ken. Not Ken Butcher.
No, Ken Butcher.
Terry Pat Butcher. That would work.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done that as an option, actually. Patrick. Should have done that. Why not? Maybe you would have tricked that. I could have tricked you. And, oh,
I wouldn't
have gone for it. I couldn't have done.
Oh, but no, it is Ian, and it is 1-1 going to question three. Question three. And now this is a bit long-winded, this question, but I hope it makes sense, but bear with me. Kieran Dyer, it's his birthday this month as well. Now, he made his debut and played his final Town game against the same team, but who? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
His debut, okay. It was against Sheffield United, Crystal Palace or Reading. So, made his debut and his final Town game. Of course, he had that loan spell, didn't he, back in 2011. So, basically, that his final game. And when I was looking at the stat, I was like, oh, the same team. So, I thought, that is a strike question. That is going to be named. So, yeah, Sheffield United, Crystal Palace, or Reading. Of course, both games were at Portland Road in the Championship as well.
Oh, Ken. I've written it now, but I want to change my answer. But I've written it now, so let's stick with it.
Go on. Always stick to your first answer.
Yeah. I've gone for Reading.
Okay.
I've gone for Sheffield United.
Okay. Yeah.
And if this is wrong, I'll give my reasoning. And if it's right, I'll give my reasoning.
Okay. So, James, what are you thinking about changing it to?
I think Reading might have been in a lower division when Kieran Dyer would have played his debut, would have made his debut. Like, I think they are a more recent Championship side. I don't think they would have been in Championship then.
They were.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, all these teams here were in the, okay, in the same division. Start. You're both wrong, though. It's Crystal Palace.
I was convinced that he would have played his last game in a playoff game, and we played Sheffield United in the playoffs in the 90s.
No, remember, he returned on loan in 2011.
Oh, for God's
sake. I did say that.
I completely forgot about that.
He did say that as well.
I did say that as well.
We were on about Massimo Longo and loan. Oh, really? I was too busy watching the darts. We were on about... We're on about loan players that you just completely forget about with Massimo Longo. Well, there you go. Kieran Dyer is within that. Jesus.
But there we go. Final question is on Massimo Longo, actually. So segues, lovely. Now he scored one goal in 11 games for Town, but who set up his goal against Carlisle, which we lost in extra time in the cup? Was it Jay Emmanuel Thomas, Josh Carson, remember him, or Carlos Edwards? It's actually a really good goal. Actually, somehow it's on YouTube, that goal, despite us losing against Carlisle. But yeah, it's not a bad little finish. Good little setup from one of these three players. Now, whoever gets it right, of course, they win. We do have a tiebreaker and we'll use it because fun and all that and gambling and all that. Gamble responsibly. But yes, James, who do you reckon?
Okay, I've gone for Josh Carson.
Ooh.
Okay.
I've gone for on the purely on the basis that I'm going to be seeing him on the 27th away at AFC Sudbury. I've gone for Carlos Edwards and his little picture of a car there.
Whoa,
very good. You're both wrong. It's Jay Emmanuel Thomas. Oh. This is just so the tiebreaker is needed. Wow.
What an absolute thriller this has been.
It's been, yeah. The one answer you got right was the middle name of Terry Butcher, which was Ian. And a tiebreaker is not multiple choice. It is the closest to the correct answer. Maybe that's what is needed more often. Is just random.
We're both get exact now.
Yeah. I haven't got another tiebreaker, boys, so don't do that, please. Now, how many times have Town won on Boxing Day since 2000. Yeah, I wasn't going to go back to like the 50s. So that's just too much. Okay. I just went 2000s. So 19 games has been played in total. And the last being a goalless draw with Gillingham. So that's one draw. So that's not one win there. Of course, in 2019 was the last time. Paul Lambert, of course, in charge. But yeah, 19 games since 2000. How many do you reckon we've won?
I've got a number.
Okay. Of course, closest gets the point, or wins, basically. If you get a bang on, well done.
Okay. Bloomers, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first. I think it's, well, on the basis that I'm struggling to remember one, apart from one, and we'll get to this later, I've gone for a low number. I've gone for four.
Okay. Oh, Bloomers, don't say four. Don't say four.
Oh, bloody hell, boys.
I tell you why. I think I've got recency bias as well, similar to Bloomers. But you know, I can't remember a lot of wins in Boxing Day.
Oh Christ! Actually, I've just remembered another one. So I can remember three now. So, okay.
So we've drawn the strike. We've gone out on the strike as a draw.
We'll do the charity shield thing and share the trophy. Do you remember they used to do that? We'll share the trophy up the charity shield.
How many is it?
It's actually eight wins.
Eight out of 19. That's loads.
I think in the 2000, you know, early 2000, we got a few wins. You know, I think we beat Leicester one year, a few times under Joe Royal.
Right. So, yeah, hold that. Before you say any more, Ross, I know what's coming up as the next part of the show. So don't say any because it will give away some of our.
Whoa. And now we cut to our sponsors, Manscaped and Ginger Pickle.
Yes,
for all of your grooming and advertising needs.
I wasn't segueing into that.
I wish I was more prepared to have another tiebreaker, but I don't. But as you said, you're going to share it, and why not?
To end
the strike this year, it's been shared with James and Bloomers. Definitely.
Look, in the spirit of Christmas.
Yeah.
It's shared. I'm happy to share the strike trophy. It's the most. Yeah. The most strike trophies I've ever had. Half.
Yes, I've now got half a strike trophy to my name.
Yeah. Hopefully next year, James, you'll have a better time at it. Definitely. Well, as Bloomers has already said, it does segue nicely into Boxing Day games. We haven't had one for a while. We're going to be talking about the best and worst festive town fixtures you've been at. So Bloomers, we're going to start off with the worst, then we'll get to the best. So, Bloomers, go to the worst one in terms of just the game itself, maybe, itself.
Yeah, once again, recency bias is coming up here because it came up on the bottom of the tiebreaker question, and I was there. That goalless draw against Gillingham a few years ago was dross. To put it into perspective, it was my dad's Christmas Day present. I drove, so I was sober. We sat in section six. Not that there's nothing wrong with that. Just so happened we had a annoying section six person next to us. I'm again not tarnishing section six with the same brush. Just he was, and it rained all day that day, and the water coming down from the roof was hitting us in the head. It just where we were sitting, you couldn't make it any worse, and it was a horrendous, horrendous game. So that's certainly up there.
I was lucky I had that off that day, so I didn't go. I had a plan, so I was pleased I missed that, but I heard some bad things. And of course, Paul Lambert in his press conference sort of said, yeah, if he wants me to go, I'll go. And then New Year's Day, signed a 5-year deal, which was even worse.
You have to laugh when you put it into perspective like that.
Yeah. God, 5 years. James, what's been your worst Boxing Day? Is it the same or have you got another one?
No, so I've got another game and I don't remember a lot about this game because I try and forget all games which we lose / play badly. But I remember that we lost 3-0 away to QPR on Boxing Day. And I remember listening on the radio and basically it just being pretty drab affair from Ipswich Town. It's basically like interrupt family to listen on the radio and then quickly turn it off, and it was a bit of a disappointment. So that was Boxing Day 2018. That was pretty appalling. But I don't have many thoughts about that game. flexing the Boxing Day a bit. Actually, no, this is still about Boxing Day. My best games are not about Boxing Day, but I remember 2010 Boxing Day. When we Ipswich play at home, I get a free pass from the family to go down and watch them. So thank you very much to my family for that. In 2010, we were playing Watford on Boxing Day. My mum had driven me down to the ground to go to the game. And it was about 90 minutes before kickoff, and she'd driven away. And then word went around the stadium that the match had been abandoned due to a frozen pitch. So I was down at Portman Road, freezing everything off, and the match had been abandoned. So I was quickly on the phone again to my mum saying, "Oh, can you pick me up? The match is not on anymore." And it was at 1:30, which was the decision was made, which for a 3:00 kickoff. So very bizarre. And in a way, similar theme to the last couple of years as well. When fixtures don't happen on Boxing Day, it's almost worse than it's maybe not worse than us losing, but I just hate it so much when we don't play on Boxing Day, because it's a very much tradition in my routine that on Boxing Day, I'll either listen to it on the radio or go down in person at Portman Road. So when we don't have a game, it feels like it's not a proper Christmas. So we're really nice to get down on Boxing Day this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been 3 years. And of course, that Gillingham game, I'm sure it wasn't as packed as it's going to be Boxing Day history at Oxford.
Last year was Northampton was postponed because they had COVID. And then the year before, or was it the other way around?
Other way around.
1 year it was like we had COVID. No, maybe it was 2 years ago we had COVID, because I think Paul Lambert had COVID. 1 year ago, the other team had COVID and they got postponed. Yeah. I can't remember which way around it was, but I can't remember who the teams were either. But
It was Gillingham again, I think, last year, because we then played Gillingham in the new year, of course, which was Kieran McKenna's second game.
And it absolutely hailed it down the whole time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
That. Yeah.
So, yeah.
There we go. Okay, then. Yeah.
Positivity times.
Yes. Let's get back to some positivity. Your best and Bloomers, we sort of expand this to just December fixtures in total, because there's one special game.
I'll do two Boxing Day ones.
That's fine. Take it away.
So, one of them, we actually already spoke about this team, QPR. We played QPR loads on Boxing Day recently. I don't know why.
Is there a thing about Boxing Day fixtures where they try and get you geographically close?
So, speaking to my dad, who is older than me, that's kind of how biology works. He said to me that, yes, in boxing, originally on Boxing Day, you'd always play your local rivals, or if not them, a team right near you.
Is that because of trains? There's no trains on Boxing Day or something
possibly,
like that?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's actually quite a sound reason.
Stop. It means the team doesn't have to travel far. Like, they can be with their family on Christmas Day.
You'd also play them twice in like 3 days. Again, maybe it's because of the transport thing. You'd play both the same team really close together. So obviously nowadays it's less of an issue, especially with all football teams having private travel.
Back in the day, they used to play on Christmas Day, didn't they? I think back in the 50s and stuff, I think they used to play Christmas Day, which is just crazy.
If you go to American sports like the NBA and the NFL, that still happens. In fact, you're at a loose end on Christmas Day. There's a couple of cracking... Well, actually, no, they're not cracking. But there's a couple of good American football games to watch. So I would advise you to do that. Going back to the question. So the two games I remember the most, one of them isn't the obvious one. One of them is I played QPR a few years ago. I looked at this before I came on the pod to double check the year. It was 2015, so the year after we got in the playoffs. And we beat QPR 2-1 at Portman Road. And I don't know if you remember this, either of you. We conceded by the sounds of it against... I was reading a BBC Sport report on it, so this isn't in-depth. It sounds like we conceded against a run of play. And then about 10 minutes from time, Jonathan Douglas, yes, that Jonathan Douglas, yes, that viral video of Jonathan Douglas... away at Newcastle.
Maybe one way, then the other way.
he's got an overhead kick.
Did you?
I promise you, I'm not lying. You can look at it on the highlights. Overhead kick's generous. It's more me at five-a-side overhead kick than
scissor kick.
City. But it is an overhead kick nonetheless. Anyways, he's equalised, and the 90th minute, a looped ball comes. I remember this clear as day because I was in the north stand. Looped ball comes over the top. And Luke Chambers comes from about 10 yards away, steams into the box, meets it perfectly, heads it back across goal, into the corner. Wild scenes, fantastic win. Kept us right in the mix of the playoffs that year. I know, unfortunately, we fell short at the end. Fantastic game, and that was really good. And then the second one is the obvious one, so feel free to expand upon this if you went to it, James, is Brentford away on Boxing Day 2015. I went with it. I stayed overnight, actually. Went with a friend very early in the car in the morning. A win would have taken us top of the league. And, well, 17 seconds in, we are 1-0 up and just delirium in the stands. Go 3-0 up after 30 minutes. Never seen anything like it. Well-oiled away support, because famously Brentford had a pub in every corner of...
That's the thing I missed the most about Brentford's old ground is those four pubs. Oh, I did not go to that game, but the pubs on the corner, the proper old London boozers, are just fantastic.
Yeah, oh, well, I found facts as well. The last time we played there, the season we got relegated, I went into a lock-in. I was invited to a lock-in, rather, with some friends after the game. We lost 2-0, and it was a Tuesday night. That was good fun. But yeah, I mean, ridiculous. We won 4-2 in the end. Tommy Smith scored the fourth in about...
That's a good goal, wasn't it? That's
a good fantastic goal. Finish. Standing in a terrace, we went top of the league. Really, really, really thought over that festive period, because we also picked up a couple of crucial wins. I think we beat Charlton as well over that period, that it was going to be the year. And obviously it wasn't, but it was a special, special time and a very special win.
Yeah, I was there as well. That was when I was there as a supporter. I'm still a supporter now, of course, but I was there in the terrace as well. So I must have probably bumped into a Bloomers celebrating one of those four goals. Because yeah,
I was on the floor when the first goal went in.
Like, yeah, but well, that was unbelievable. Yeah, I do miss Brentford away. We'll have hopefully an experience going to a new Brentford stadium, but it won't be the same, will it? Because that was one of a kind stadium. Some great ones there, Bloomers. Over to you then, James. Your best festive fixtures.
Yeah, so I've picked two slightly before Christmas, but in the Christmas and festivity vibes. So my first one, and I know we were talking about a little bit about this last night, Ross, was Ipswich Town 3, Leicester City 0. And if anybody... Oh, so first I'll give you the date. It was December the 18th, 2010. The managers were Roy Keane and Sven-Goran Eriksson. And the thing that makes this game more famous than anything else is that the pitch was absolutely covered in snow. It was ridiculous. It was an absolutely farcical game of football, which was absolutely fantastic as a fan, because your side were already winning when the game was threatened to be called off and then it was played on. So what happened is, I think Ipswich were 2-0 up, and then Stuart Atwell was the referee. I looked that up today. He took the players off for about 15 minutes, and the ground staff cleared the pitch off, like cleared the lines, and then they came back on. They finished the first half. We were 3-0 up at half time. They had to have an extended half time. I've heard that behind the scenes there was talks between Roy, between the ref, and between Sven. And I think Roy Keane's just, you know, anger and kind of demeanor at the time really forced Atwell to keep the game on. Town being 3-0 up is obviously a very commanding position to be in. I think it was about we had a 20-minute half time, and then the game continued. We played out the second half fairly. There was nothing really much going on. Snow was still falling, and within 10 minutes of the second half starting again, any bits of the pitch which were uncovered had then been covered up again. So it was. In hindsight, it was completely not suitable for a game of football, but Ipswich was so far ahead, we were all so glad that we managed to see out the result there. And yeah, it's going to be one that's on the comedy reels forever, because you should never be playing a game of football in that weather.
Fun fact about that game, that was my cousin's first and only ever live game of football. She couldn't care less, but she took me when I was, must have been about 16 years old. And we were supposed to be sitting in the Lower Britannia stand. We used to sit in Block JJ. That's when I used to have a season ticket there. We ended up in the top tier of the Britannia stand because it was so bitter. Yeah. And we had a bit more shelter up there. But yeah, I think she seemed to think that this is what football fans had to do every week. And she's never been back.
Let's not forget it was also on Sky Sports that day, and I think it was a, if correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but it was a late changed game on Sky Sports because other games had been cancelled that weekend or like in a few days before because of the weather. So I think it went late onto Sky Sports. So they really wanted to see the game out.
All I know is, and I don't know if you touched on this when, because I missed part of James's answer, but with Ross's amazing editing, you never would have noticed, but I'll be honest now, just in case I ruin this. The only reason that game wasn't postponed is because Roy Keane was our manager.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that. I definitely mentioned that.
I was going to say, like, absolutely no way on earth that gets allowed to go ahead if it wasn't for the fact that Keane was sitting there melting half the ice with his stare.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, I just remember like Jason Scotland, long sleeves, gloves, everything. Like it's just completely fantastic. It was a really unique experience, actually, as a football fan.
Because they do like, what's it called? Darts? Not darts. I'm watching darts. Like football, go, like they show like football, old football games, like every now and then.
Yeah.
That comes up actually quite a lot, that game. Look out for it next time.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be posted on social media again when time comes around next year because it is just one of those timeless games, which is like, how did this ever get finished?
Yeah.
And then I've got one more game, it's a bit more of a personal note about why I enjoyed it, but it was also an incredibly good time to be an Ipswich Town fan. It was Ipswich Town 2, Wigan Athletic 1, December the 21st, 2004. We won 2-1 on that day. Darren Bent with a 88th or 89th minute winner to send Ipswich top of the championship at Christmas, which doesn't happen too often. And I mentioned that this is on a personal note because for that game and for that game only, I was one of the flag bearers on the tunnel for Portman Road. So I absolutely love that. The club gave me a full kit, so like I was dressed up in the full kit, and I got to keep that afterwards. I was in the upper south stand with my dad, and I wasn't an Ipswich Town regular at the time. Let's say I only went to the games ad hoc, but yeah, us winning that day, putting us top, like it was just magical as a kid. I was 10 years old then, 2004. So yeah, really great day or great evening as a kid. It was an evening game. That game also famous for Leighton Baines absolutely hoofing one in from about like 40 yards, which is an absolutely ridiculous goal. If you cannot remember that goal, get on YouTube, find those highlights and watch it because it was absolutely outrageous. It's one of those goals you kind of just sit there and stunned and you kind of want to clap because it was just that, like, how the hell did he swaz a ball in from there? So
it's currently doing the rounds again on Twitter, by the way. So look out for it. But yeah, I will, because I was there, I'll contend this best goal I've ever seen at Portman Road.
It would have been going around on Twitter because it was December 21st, so that's yesterday. So the anniversary yesterday,
of course.
So please go and find that. But also revel in the fact that we scored a last minute winner, and there's absolute scenes around the ground. So. Top at Christmas, that's quite festive, isn't it? So I think that fits the bill.
It does. Well, some great memories there, boys. Some different, very iconic games there as well. And yeah, I was there that night as well when we beat Wigan. You know, 89th minute, Darren Bent, just great scenes. And always great to, you know, score a late winner, definitely in the festive period. Okay then, boys. We're going to end the pods with some hot takes for Oxford United at Portman Road. We know they're boring a little bit because we've had their games against them. A lot of goalless draws, a lot of draws. Hopefully, Town can hopefully continue that celebrations of Christmas on Boxing Day with a win. But James Bloomers, what's your thoughts on this game and your hot takes to sublime to ridiculous? Bloomers, first of all, what do you reckon?
My hot take is that there won't be a goal.
That is a cold take.
I was thinking about this before we came on, what it could be, but I think it's a perfect storm for, if not a 0-0, something of that ilk to happen in terms of it being low scoring or whatnot, because Oxford, not necessarily, I'm not going to call them boring Oxford, because that's last season. But I think that we might. I know every crowd's been big this season. Obviously, this is the potential to be our biggest crowd of the season. I believe that around 27,500 home tickets have been sold. Ross, you're closer to the club than I am. Is that correct? Is that figure around right?
Yep, sure, definitely.
So, anyways, either way, it's a big gate. And yes, we beat Derby with a big gate, very close game. But it does seem like it's going to be a very expectant crowd. And there might be some fans there that not necessarily go every game because it's Boxing Day and see that we're second in the league and would expect us to win 5-0. And obviously, with the way we play, it's not, you know, a given that we're going to come out all guns blazing and go 2-0 up after 10 minutes. It could happen, but it's more than not that we might feel our way into the game, might be 0-0 at 30 minutes, 35 minutes, 40 minutes. All of a sudden, the crowd get a bit nervy. Oxford dig in a little bit more. Or Oxford could even go 1-0 up, but just for the sake of the hot take, we'll say 0-0. And at that stage, you know, it's not an atmosphere conducive to a 5-0 home win. I hope I'm wrong, but you said hot take, so that's one that I can see. I've seen the highlights of the Wigan game. I was in a different country for it, so I didn't see the full 90. I have seen the vast majority of the highlights now already. It seems that apart from the sitter that was missed by Conor Chaplin, there wasn't really a lot for Ipswich fans to shout about going forward. We do seem to have these spells where we don't get on the front foot or certainly don't create loads of chances. I was at the Exeter away game the other month and yes, we won 2-0. I certainly don't remember us having a glut of chances. I remember a couple of sort of half ones and the two goals. So, yeah, be interesting to see what does happen. I pray to God I'm wrong, but I'm also quite a few points behind the prediction league that we have between us, and I need a shock result to get me up the table. So I'll go 0-0. I hope I'm wrong. I also think that 0-0 wouldn't even be terminal because I feel that one of the other teams around us, Sheffield Wednesday or Plymouth, both of them won't win. And here we go, like classic, I'll be wrong, but I don't think both of them will win. So we'll see. That's my hot take, and I'll give the floor away now to James to explain exactly why I'm wrong.
So yeah, to touch on the Wigan point, yeah, you're right. We didn't have a glut of chances. We huffed and puffed, and we were doing our percentage-based tactics of let's try and work the same opportunities again and again, and unfortunately it didn't work. Quick one on Wickham as well, not about the game, but shout out to all my lads from Capital Blues that I went with on Saturday. It was an absolute pain to try and get trains there and back, so we did some taxi shares and did a taxi share back to the end of the Metropolitan line to make sure we could get back to London after all the trains had finished. Great group of lads, and we ended up drinking outside the VIP Tesco. It's not VIP Tesco. The pub was full, basically, so we went to get some tinnies from Tesco and drank outside Tesco, and it was the most London away day ever, London people away day ever, because salmon sandwiches were being eaten, and Beaver Town was being drunk, and Camden House was being drunk. So, yeah, classic Londoners there. But yeah, had a great time nonetheless. Ruined by 2 hours of football, as most Saturdays are. But not this season, so much. And yeah, so moving swiftly on, hot take, two hot takes. Hot take number one, Lee Evans and Shawnee Aluko are both going to start this game of football. That is what I think. They're both coming back from injury. They've both had minutes. And I think that Boxing Day will be the game that they both start together. Obviously, Shawnee started a couple of weeks ago, the home game, so that may be not so much a shock. But I think Lee Evans will start this game. I just feel like we're going to need that battle in midfield from Lee and Sammy. So, yeah, my hot take number one is that Shawnee and Lee will both start the game. And hot take number two is not going to be a nil. It's not going to be a 0-0 draw. And I say that because my hot take is Ipswich Town are going to score a penalty kick. And that is pretty rare for Ipswich Town. I just feel that it might be an attack versus defence at a little while. I feel like we will have the players on the pitch to run at them a little bit. And I feel like they might be defending a little bit deep at times, as a lot of teams do. So I feel we might have a few little darting runs in the box. And I just feel like, and once again, we're a little overdue on a penalty. So we're going to get a penalty. We're going to score it. So that's my hot take. We're going to win the game of football. That is also that is my third prediction. But that's not a hot take because we're winning a lot of games of football this season. So yeah, scoring a penalty and
scoring the penalty.
Who's scoring the penalty? I can tell you who's not scoring the penalty, but let's go with who is scoring the penalty. I think Ladapo is going to take it and he's going to score.
Because the last one we had was, of course,
if I Chaplin, remember, probably.
Derby. No, last one we had was against Derby.
Yes, but the one we scored, didn't we, against Morecambe Evans. And then, of course, Connor Chaplin missed one prior to that one as well. Because we had two penalties in that game. But yeah, it must have been a derby game the last
time. It could be Evans again, because considering that he's starting this game based on hot take number one.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe Evans. But yeah, I think Freddie. I'm going with Freddie. I feel like he needs to, you know, get on the goal scoring hype again. So Freddie Ladapo. Okay. But yeah, that's I feel like they're not that ridiculous, but they've been thought out. But I don't want to predict anything ridiculous because I think those two things are going to happen.
Nice. Okay. Of course, the last time we've lost a game, we bounced back, and hopefully that is the case. Because when we lost against Lincoln and Plymouth, we're back. You know, got wins back to back, which is good. All right, then, boys. Any other business from the Oxford game? I'm just quickly bringing up some of the Boxing Day fixtures in League One. Sheffield Wednesday travel to Fleetwood. Enjoy that. And Plymouth travel to Cheltenham. Enjoy that. So thankfully, we've got a nice home comfort for Boxing Day. No travelling for us. We can just
at
chill.
At least Plymouth to Cheltenham is like probably one of the shortest journeys they could do. Fleetwood to Sheffield. Sheffield to Fleetwood. Not that close, but still like not. It's not like coming down Ipswich. So they've kind of done that localised thing again, which we were talking about earlier. So yeah, it's obviously nice to be at home, and hopefully not too many mince pies for the boys on Christmas Day, so we can come out firing.
Definitely. And of course, we won't be doing another fan social this year, as we said. So quick thoughts on the Pompey game as well. Once again, people will be listening to us, you know, when we've seen the Oxford result anyway. But just quick thoughts on Pompey. You know, we've beaten them already this season. They also beat us in the Papa John's Trophy and all that stuff, but doesn't matter. But Bloomers, Pompey, thoughts on that quickly?
I'll keep this very short. I think that it'll be as tough a game as it was last season, and I think it's the same pre-match build-up we'll probably have. They're on a bit of a slide right now, but I don't go in there with, oh, we're definitely going to win. If we win 4-0 again, was it 4-0? It was, wasn't it? Yeah, if we win 4-0 again, then great, but I think it'll be a much closer game. I do see us nicking it. I think we will win, but I don't. If you go into this thinking, oh, Ipswich are Ipswich and Ports are on a massive slide, we'll get found out. And they might even have a new manager by then if they get a bad result on Boxing Day. I do think that won't be the case. I think the Cowboys will still be there. And who knows? It might be Ipswich's win there that sees the owners of Ports pull the plug. But yeah, I think it'll be a tough game, but one that we'll actually win. I'm more confident of that game than I am on Boxing Day, put it that way.
Okay, then. James,
and from my side, I'm sure you're going to get all the rhetoric from Danny Cowley again because he loves to have a go at Ipswich.
He's fighting for his job, so he's going to be laying it on as thick as he can.
He is a bitter and twisted man when it comes to Ipswich Town Football Club. So I feel that as Bloomer said, he'll be laying it on so hard. And I think we've got to look at the perspective again. You get 4 points in those two games, you're happy as Larry, to be honest. So I'm the converse to Bloomers. I think that I think we're more likely to win on Boxing Day at home than we are away to Portsmouth, just because I think Portsmouth are a tricky test. And Oxford, although they've proved a tricky test in the past, and I don't know if we've beaten them or like we've got a very poor record against them. I just feel like this season's a bit different. So let's have it. So 4 points between the two games, and I won't complain. But yeah, I never like going to Portsmouth. I only went to Fratton Park once. It absolutely pelted down with rain, and it's just a horrible place. Their crowd is really always up for it. So, but maybe they'll get on their backs because they're not having a great time of it at the moment. But I know like the crowd is quite fierce there, so it's not an easy place to go.
I think six fantastic, 4-3 is good. Anything less than that, I would be a little bit concerned.
Yeah, if you get two draws, then it always like, oh, you're unbeaten, but you'd rather a win than a loss in a way, wouldn't you? Well, you get more points, so common sense, isn't it?
Yes, always, always the way. All right then, boys. Two big games to come up. Looking forward to those. Boxing Day and then, of course, trip to good old Fratton Park. Blue Moons, you been able to get rid of the ticket yet? I know you
I came into possession of a Portsmouth ticket, which I gave away on Twitter. And it has been taken by provisionally taken by someone that I'll be meeting in the banners of the Lower North Stand for an away game. That was my email going off, by the way. someone's emailing me saying that they want the ticket or don't want the ticket. I'll have to check that in a minute. But yeah, they'll be having that. And I will be going to Lincoln, though, which I'm looking forward to. Start of dry January for me. So that would be a challenge, a slight challenge.
What's dry January?
Those who don't need it or are sheltered. I will be going the entire month of January without drinking any alcohol. A health-based decision on a couple of levels, and one that's probably a bit overdue considering last couple of weeks have seen me go to Belgium and Scotland, which is two nations renowned for their
beers and whiskies.
Alcohol. So I think I've had my fill, especially after Christmas and Boxing Day and New Year's Eve. So
fantastic.
Yeah, all the best. Yeah. Of course, yeah, we've got Lincoln City, of course, on the 2nd of Jan, but
we're
fine. We've had enough. We've had a good chat, boys.
People are already either at their destination having listened to this in the car or now on their driveway waiting to hear the end of it. And us
if you got this far, I congratulate you. Well done. Well done to the Kings of Anglia fans, social hard boys and girls out there.
Yeah, your badge is in the post.
Definitely. Well, James Bloomers, thank you as ever. Been a great year doing this podcast, been a great year doing all the other content we've done. Of course, look out for game day. If you want to get involved in future fan socials in 2023, of course, get in contact with me at RossMediaUK on Twitter and all the other socials.
I'm going to interrupt you before you do your sponsor. Huh? On behalf of me and James, yeah. Doesn't know about this. On behalf of me,
no,
and
absolutely.
I think, first of all, and last of all, a massive thank you to Ross, because without him and his tireless work throughout the season and his late nights, early mornings, everything in between, none of this would be happening. We are lucky to be able to do this, and we've met new people because of Ross setting this up. So, Ross, give yourself a massive pat on the back. You're a legend, and you've done so much for Ipswich on social media. I know you're getting paid for it, but you've still done a lot of work.
And like you've created an amazing community. You've allowed us to all become friends, all Ipswich Town fans. And like, if anybody is out there is feeling like they need some more people that they want to go to football with, then please get in touch with Ross, because you know we're always looking for more people as well to kind of come into the fold and contribute. But yeah, Ross, you've done an absolutely fantastic job for the last few years. So thank you very much.
Make me blush, boys. Make me blush. Thank you so much for that. But yeah, I couldn't do it without you guys. I couldn't do it without all the listeners out there. If you didn't listen, guys, well, there's no point doing a podcast without any listeners. So yeah, it's been one hell of a year. Hopefully it continues in 2023. Of course, big shout out to our sponsors at Manscaped. Use the code KOA to get 20% off and free delivery and all that sort of stuff. You probably maybe missed the delivery for Christmas Day, but get some more stuff for 2023. And of course, Ginger Pickle for all your marketing needs. The goats of marketing. Thanks for all for listening to all the podcasts this year. Of course, we have a Christmas special with the main boys on Christmas Day, so look out for that one. But thanks for listening all year long, and up the town. Happy Christmas, happy New Year. Bye bye for now.
Happy Christmas, up the town.
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.